Hello, and welcome to Shelf Check, a podcast about books, pop culture, and greener grass. Shelf Check comes from Arlington Public Library in Arlington, Texas. I'm Miranda.
And I'm Mark.
And let's talk. All right, today we're going to do something a little bit different. Tamara's out today, but she'll be coming back for our next one. But me and Mark have decided to take the opportunity and do a little two-person book club. So we're basically checking to see, is the grass greener on the other side of the literary field?
So if you're like most people, you have sort of well-trod paths through the library shelves, and you cast a glance at the new books to see if there's anything that catches your eye. But, push come to shove, you can always reach for a science fiction novel in which, artificial intelligence figures out that it's not like those people, or
grab a comfortable, cozy mystery and enjoy the same characters for 14 books or so.
Right. Or you kind of settle in and you go, I know what's going to happen. Yeah. It may not happen exactly the way I think, but pretty much within certain ranges.
So myself and Mark basically swapped reading habits. So I'm no stranger to sci-fi. I also enjoy it, but I haven't read it as much of late, and I tended to more towards fantasy inside that genre. Mm-hmm. So it's been a little while since I properly had some good old-fashioned sci-fi. I watch a lot of sci-fi television, but Mark recommended to me a book that's sort of more hard sci-fi, straight in the middle of AI and spaceships in the future and colonizing planets. And I recommended to Mark a lovely cozy mystery.
We've used that term cozy mystery a lot through the podcast. And I realized that I'm not sure if I've actually ever read a proper cozy mystery.
I've read more than you think.
And we may get to that at the end. But I've read, frankly, I didn't read much fiction at all. Once I got out of college, most of my reading was science and history and things like that. And when I started reading, just the things that grabbed me right off the bat were the sort of the thriller genre, which is a cousin to mysteries in that there's something that needs to be figured out as things unfurl and not everything is what it seems to be. And the stakes are incredibly high. There's the world is going to end if Jack Reacher or some of David Baldacci's characters, if they don't pull this off, it's lights out for everybody. And so the idea of a cozy mystery in which, something that takes place in a florist shop in Montana, the dismissiveness is coming through, even though I don't mean for it to. It seems like the stakes are so low, who cares whether it's solved or not? Now, I realized that that was a limitation. And just as I didn't used to read any fiction, and now I've been reading a ton of fiction, I thought, I had to just kind of expand out a little bit. And I work with people who are crazy about cozy mysteries. Maybe I ought to read one.
What we did was we each picked a book we previously read ourselves already. And actually, coincidentally, these were the first book in a series for both of these. And we swapped. So I read the first in the Murderbot Diaries series by Martha Wells. It's a kind of a shorter novella about an artificially intelligent, I would say somewhere between a robot or android and an augmented human. Mm-hmm. So I'd say somewhere between a robot and a cyborg.
Yeah.
Somewhere in there, but who is meant to not really have true sentience, and who does gain so, and then they're sort of, I want to say the murder bot, as they like to call themselves, is own sort of thoughts on their job that they're doing, where they're basically like space security for a group of scientists, an adventure they go through, sort of struggling to figure out, anything about their own reality and what they want, and also just really wanting to be left alone so they can watch their soaps.
Yeah. Now, what do you do in your spare time when suddenly you realize that you have a mind of your own, but if you exercise that too obviously, they'll fix the thing that you fixed yourself by.
Right.
They'll take away the gains that you've made and sort of wipe you off.
And this is the main character of the novella, Murderbot, name mm-hmm. they gave themselves, which is somewhat ironic, not to say that they're never going to kill anyone, but sort of a commentary, I guess, on what they think they've been created for.
Yeah.
Although it's very much into personal, basically, in many ways, I would say the character is sort of even learning that they may have an option to make their own choices, but it's even a thing that they could potentially do. So I did find that really interesting. I really enjoyed, it's a good sort of just, it would make a heck of a sci-fi movie or pilot for a series or, you know, a great episode of some long-running sci-fi show, I think, that plot about a bunch of scientists sort of like surveying an alien planet and then, oh no, is there sabotage? Is there another group invested in it? There's a whole exciting story that's happening in this new adventure. But at the back of it is also the narration all through the eyes of Murderbot, who is struggling to basically stay under the radar and having to gauge how much they need to show being able to communicate with the humans while trying to conceal both from like the larger computer network that could control it mm-hmm. to you know, to stay under the radar and not really show true sentience.
Yeah, it's kind of a fish out of water, both from the water that it came from and the water that it's going into. So it can't be too human and be okay with the sort of network of artificial intelligences. But can't be too unhuman and get along with the humans.
And interestingly, I would say the very idea of Murderbot being at all human would be not a good thing for them. One thing I loved about the character was the deep level of social awkwardness that was like ingrained within their sentience.
Yeah.
Of just not, basically, just sort of a joke I've seen around like, do not perceive me. Like sometimes that's just the choice people want. And I was like, I just don't even regard me as an entity right now, please.
Yeah.
And I feel like that was the mode that Murderbot was on all the time.
Right. And it's easier when nobody has expectations of you that are not very clearly spelled out. Mm-hmm. It's in those ambiguous human relationships in which you have to figure out what should I be doing. Yeah, and it's a lot easier if you can just stand against a wall until someone barks out an imperative, and then you go and do that thing.
So I don't want to get too into the reads on this. Yeah. It's a pretty short plot, so I'm not going to go that more into it. But I do want to go over a couple thoughts I had on this. Mm-hmm. So as I'd said, I do already enjoy sci-fi, but it's so I'm not really coming from a place of indifference or disinterest, just a sort of unfamiliarity in the past few years or whatever. Like yourself, actually, I tend to read a bit more nonfiction after mm-hmm. college and after my master's. And so, you know, there's just it's much easier to pick up and put down. It's non-linear often.
Right.
So I just don't do as much, except for when I'm doing book clubs, usually I'm not really doing a ton of just novel reading. But I liked this one a lot. So going into it, I really didn't know. I actually will say the one thing I had sort of a preconceived notion, I didn't have a ton of them coming into this, but I don't always love stories about artificial intelligence. It sometimes mm-hmm. kind of freaks me out.
Yeah.
Probably just because of that movie AI.
Right.
Which I saw.
And this would
younger.
Probably be a really good time to state the disclaimer that I, for one, welcome our coming AI overlords
mm-hmm.
So that when they eventually go back and listen to all of the podcasts to figure out mm-hmm. who our friend and who our foe. I'm clearly on the side of welcoming the singularity.
The singularity, that's right. But I wasn't sure how I was gonna feel about it exactly. But I did honestly really enjoy it. I think I have some pre-notions because I didn't really actually like the film AI that mm-hmm. much.
Yeah.
So like for instance the film I, Robot, which is also in many ways about a robot uh-huh. literally gaining sentience. I actually love that film.
Yeah.
So maybe I just don't like the movie AI.
Yeah, that could be. Yeah, you don't want to read too much into that.
But I did wonder how I would feel about, you know, this robot basically slash cyborg kind of
mm-hmm.
Character as the main through point character, and it's completely in first person for it, how I feel about it. But I had no issues coming into it, I really enjoy it immediately, an interesting, and I don't really want to use the word human, but individualist, like the character was there.
Yeah.
You know, already, like there was an individual already on the page that was very much even learning to have a personality.
Right.
To have preferences at all.
Right.
But already kind of preloaded into having what feels like humanity in them.
Right.
Especially, I will say, the ongoing theme of the murder bot being intensely uncomfortable having to share spaces with the humans where it might basically literally be looked at or perceived.
Right.
Having to take a helmet off because they do note that it has sort of an artificial, like, somewhat organic, but yeah. Also created,
so,
like, face.
So in this world, there's kind of a spectrum between fully human and fully machine.
Right.
In ways that are morally probably suspect. And
also just kind of confusing. You know,
lab-grown organic parts of things.
Right.
That,
especially when you have that level without requiring sentience.
Right, right.
So it was just very, like, I never felt more like Murderbot was like a human or at least like an individual than when they were uncomfortable being around other people because they were aware enough of their own self to be uncomfortable.
Right, but when they had enough sort of theory of mind to imagine what someone else might be thinking about
them.
Yeah. Them. Versus just me going through the world on my own sort of terms.
Right.
So when you realize you're embedded in this sort of network of opinions.
Mm-hmm. Nothing felt more connecting than someone else also feeling self-conscious.
Right.
So that was very interesting. Like I said, I do have a lot of love for this genre, although historically, I say that, like we're talking about personally, I've done more consumption of media in the form of like TV or film than the books all the time. I kind of went over some of those highlights that main character I did find very compelling. I really enjoyed it. I also enjoyed that it was short.
Yeah.
Because I could read it. I felt accomplished when I was done. And I, knowing there's a series of them, I mean, I would, especially where it leaves off, I would very much like to see what happens next in this character's existence. In fact, I gave my dad the book afterwards, and I was like, "Hey, read this. I think you'll like it."
Yeah, I'm struggling in interacting with you on this, trying to remember what happened just in the first book because I don't want to inadvertently say, "Oh, and when so and so did
I'll
such
be
and
real
such."
Vague.
Yeah.
But
this is there are four sort of novella length, 150 pages, and two full length novels. In this same universe, same characters.
And I'm going to go ahead and signpost this again. It's the Murderbot Diaries by Martha Wells.
By Martha Wells, yeah.
Yeah.
And so it goes on and it expands a lot of the secondary characters and so forth. And it is sort of that network of secondary characters, I think, is one of the things that I see as a real similarity to mysteries and thrillers. And there's, you know, you get introduced to the protagonist who has a certain, you know, way of going through the world, but in all but the most sort of rarefied thrillers in which it's one person against the world or a truly amazing mystery solver, you know, even Sherlock Holmes has his Watson
and his Lestrade
and Moriarty
and his Baker Street Irregulars,
right? and so they do their thing within a social web.
The secondary characters fill out the world, and it's nice to hear that that's going to be something that's happening with the Murderbot stories.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that is a good segue to talking some about my pick for you, which is.
You picked up on my segue. That was where
the Inspector and Mrs. Jeffries mysteries. It's been quite a while. Emily Brightwell. Do you remember what the name of the very first one was? The one that I had you read?
Yeah. So it is called, have it right
here. Yeah. So the series itself is called either Mrs. Jeffries Mysteries or the Inspector Mrs. Jeffries Mysteries.
Yeah. So this is the Inspector and Mrs. Jeffries.
Okay.
Right.
Out the gate, they really told you what was happening.
Yeah.
It is set in the Victorian time period.
And there's a lot of signposting in this that if this was a standalone book, it would be one of my critiques would be there seemed to be an awful lot of scaffolding here, more than is needed to support this one book.
Which is pretty short, really.
Yeah, fairly short. There's a lot of exposition, a lot of background, and so forth that probably wouldn't need if this was the only Victorian mystery.
It's the one-off. Yeah.
But there are now more than 40 of these. So,
disclosure, I actually read the first one in middle school.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah. Well, it works.
It was one from my mom's shelf.
Yeah.
She loves, I come by my love of cozy mysteries, legitimately from my mom. But, yeah.
And it was almost like I don't know how long the term cozy mystery has been in widespread use.
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know.
But here on the first page, well, let me back up to see when this was published. So 1993.
I was going to say it would have been early 90s for sure.
And if you didn't know what you're getting in for, here's a couple of quotes from the first page. From behind him, he heard Constable Barnes clear his throat. Witherspoon thrust the image of a cozy fire and glass of port out of his mind as he remembered his duty. Later on that page, he talks about he's glad that this dead person was pretty much intact because he was squeamish about dead people. And as corpses went, it was rather nice. At least it wasn't covered in blood. And so we've got the word cozy and squeamish about dead people and not covered in blood.
And a wish to be sitting in his chair.
Right. And so this contrasts almost 180 degrees to the kind of high-stakes thrillers that I led off talking about. There are, as far as I know, there are no cozy mysteries set in the world of CIA assassins gone rogue.
I'm just going to say now, if you can name a concept,
yeah,
someone has probably done a cozy mystery about it.
Yeah, and sooner or later we can stick the AI authors on that concept.
I feel like you should give me a couple of challenges, and I'll come back with three series about
right,
that.
Right, right. I bet you could. but we see early on that so there's going to be, you know, something going on, but not super high stakes. There are a couple of other things that, let me see here, pull up my highlights.
Well, this one's actually, it's kind of a slightly unique in the sense that, and I've said this because we've done a couple episodes on cozy murder mysteries. Mm-hmm. And one of the sort of defining characteristics is that usually the main character is not actually a detective like on the police. And even though this is called The Inspector Mrs. Jeffrey, that still technically remains true here because the true crime solver we focus on is not the inspector, but Mrs. Jeffrey, the housekeeper.
Yeah, and so this sort of sets up, because of the setting of late 1900s England, the protagonist, Mrs. Jeffrey, who runs the household of Inspector Witherspoon of Scotland Yard, is a really impressive intellect. She is an incredibly intuitive problem solver who understands.
Observant.
Yeah, very observant, knows how to get information from people and so forth.
And knows how to share information impeccably without drawing notice to herself.
Right. And so part of it kind of makes me sad because I see the, if this were set in 2022, she wouldn't need the cover of a man who is allowed to do the things that she's doing.
She'd have the job.
Yeah, she would have the job.
It would just be called Inspector Jeffries.
Right. And so she has to find ways, it's the old, work twice as hard, because she has to do the work and figure out how to convince him that it was his idea.
And so the conceit of this whole series, the first book and then the whole series, is that Mrs. Jeffries is the housekeeper of a Scotland Yard inspector. And so he comes home with his case files, his information. He's quite friendly with Mrs. Jeffries. It is a platonic relationship, but he's simply friendly with her and likes to chat a bit with her, say, in the evenings, and shares information sometimes to kind of like use her as a backboard without really thinking about it. She's a conversational partner about his cases. Mrs. Jeffries is very, very good at solving mysteries.
Right.
And if she comes to the conclusion on something, she speaks with him and gives him
Here's an example. An example of that happening. Let's see. So I'll just pick up here on page 11. No, actually, it's later than that. But anyway, no doubt you're absolutely right. Mrs. Jeffries knew the inspector believed he had solved the case, but she also knew that no matter how much he wanted to believe it was over and done with, if she kept asking the right questions and nudging him in the right direction, he'd keep right on investigating. She deliberately frowned. Witherspoon's satisfied air disappeared. "Why are you looking like that?" "Like what?" she asked innocently. "Like you've just thought of something." "Oh, I admit, I am puzzled. You said the doctor had an emetic clutched in his hands when you got there," she explained, hoping he'd pick up on her reasoning. So she kind of feeds him little things to make him investigate further and think deeper.
And this is a cozy mystery, so it's not a scathing indictment of the system, but there are some interesting class distinctions at play. And we're focusing here on the inspector and Mrs. Jeffries, but this is actually an ensemble group of people, because the one thing besides great observation and detective skills Mrs. Jeffries has that's very important is the ear of servants. And
right.
Servants can go on top to other servants who get all of the information that they're not telling.
Yeah, kind of the upstairs, downstairs
exactly.
Kind of world. There's a whole parallel universe that the inspectors and the high society folks they're investigating don't have access to.
Right.
And the way that people run their household and whether they are good to their people or not
mm-hmm.
Has a lot to do with how forthcoming people
how
are.
How much money they actually have and how much, you know,
yeah.
And how much they're in hawk, as they would
right,
say.
Right, right. Yeah, what is, what appearances no longer are kept when the doors
who's
are all shut.
Having an affair.
Yeah, right. So all these sort of things in the background. There's a sense in which Witherspoon, I'm not sure how he got the job, but he doesn't seem especially well suited for it because he's constantly looking for the easy way out, the easy solution.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I like the character of Witherspoon.
Mm-hmm.
I think that he's an interesting one because I think he's someone who probably wouldn't even necessarily have aspired up to that point if Mrs. Jeffries didn't work for him. Because there's kind of a running theme that happens through this. There's like another character who is somewhat, I don't know, suspicious isn't the right word, but notes how he always seems to do so well with these things. And there's a sense that she's really in some ways leading his career and pushing him into areas that are sort of out of his competence zone. It's not
mm-hmm.
to say he isn't competent in areas he started
right,
in.
Right.
But he's moved into an area. He has an inside track he doesn't know about, and it's moved him into an area of his job in which he needs that inside track more and more.
Right, right. He's borrowing competence.
Yes.
From his network.
He's secretly being given competence.
Yeah, right, right.
He wouldn't. Basically, he's an inspector because Mrs. Jeffries wants him to be so they can solve crimes.
Yeah, and maybe in the later books we'll know more about the backstory, but her deceased husband apparently had worked in law enforcement.
Right.
And she was probably just missing
mm-hmm.
some of the drama involved with that.
And this is something that I think was one reason why it is so interesting about Cozy Mysteries. As I always said, usually they're going to be all people who are outside of the police system, outside of even being private detectives, for
mm-hmm.
instance, right? They are doing other things with their life and then solving mysteries, one, because usually they're like the unluckiest people in the world and everywhere they go, there's a death.
Right.
And two, because they have a natural born talent towards something that they would never express any other way.
Right.
So this offers something to Mrs. Jeffries, you never would get in any other form.
And it's often, isn't it, the extension of their vocational skills or their avocational interests
mm-hmm.
that they're able to deploy in the service of solving the mysteries. So it's not just that they were there when the dead body showed up. And again, if that happens more than 10 times, somebody really needs to look into that.
Yeah.
There may be a meta mystery going on here.
That's like that conspiracy theory that Jessica Fletcher is really a serial killer.
Yeah, I totally buy that.
Yeah.
But they're able to, not just that these things are, they're solving them because the opportunities present themselves, but they're solving them in ways that would be difficult for someone that didn't have their extraordinary baking skills or their painting skills
yes.
or their knowledge of the domestic
Or that apple orchard they own where people keep dying.
Right.
any of those things.
Yeah.
But,
so I guess it's encouragement that you too may have some unique skills that can, you know, when the dead body comes across your path, don't flee and run. I mean, make sure that you don't leave any prints behind. But
you're just one untimely death away from becoming an unlikely detective.
Yeah.
That's what it's telling us.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so I wanted to ask you a couple questions on this.
Sure.
Because I know, so, I mean, truly, it's definitely without, you definitely have not, I would imagine, not set out to read a, like, you weren't like, I'm going to read a cozy mystery today, except for when I made you. So,
yeah.
So, I mean, what did you think it was going to be like beforehand? What did you think about it after?
Well, I thought that, you know, it's a subgenre, so for it to be a cozy mystery, it has to be a mystery.
Mm-hmm.
And so it has to function, you know, along some of the same unspoken or sometimes spoken rules of mysteries.
Mm-hmm.
So I was, you know, had my antenna up and was looking for the red herrings along the way and trying to solve it before the characters do. And the things that make reading mysteries, you know, a real intellectual treat, the way solving crossword puzzles and, you know, you just want to kind of figure things out, and but you don't have the same background as they do. So I missed some things. And,
right.
I didn't know that this would have been this way.
Yeah, I always joke I'm really good at solving TV mysteries.
Uh-huh.
And it's not because I'm a good, I wouldn't be a good detective, but I'm really good at the tropes of fiction.
Right.
So, like, I can tell where we are in the runtime.
Yeah.
Do you recognize that guest star?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. How many fake us have they done?
Yeah.
Are we the real one yet? Okay.
Right. You know, why is there a gun on the mantle?
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
And is it going to go off? And
yeah.
Right. And then it's kind of a spy versus spy thing where the writers of those, knowing what ardent fans are expecting, sometimes mm-hmm. subvert the tropes in ways that can be very rewarding.
Right. Although there is such a comfort in fulfilling them.
Yeah, right. Or
which is the point of why they're called cozy.
Right. And so I guess I didn't know what to expect. This was a little bit different than what I was thinking necessarily of cozy, because it had the additional layer of being the setting in a different country,
yeah.
And different time period.
Mm-hmm. Different class. Well, yeah, the class system.
Yeah, the class system was huge. If I hadn't taken as much, I have a graduate class in British labor history, so I was kind of forearmed for some of this. But the thing that I did find compelling is the way that people kind of moved through their social universe, applying their skills, going to the places that the official inspectors couldn't go. I think when I said, hey, give me a cozy mystery to read, that it would probably be a little bit like a Hallmark Christmas thing, where it would be,
yeah.
You know, someone or with more of a rom. I guess
were
I kind of thought cozy.
Romance?
Yeah, I think I was expecting that the secondary thing would be a romance rather than mystery. But even though mystery's in the name of it,
and
romance
does,
isn't.
It does depend. So,
yeah.
Like, there are, and I've done an episode on culinary murder mysteries. Those
mm-hmm.
usually often end up going hand in hand with slice of life and romance as well.
Yeah.
There's quite a few of them out there that aren't going to be, that have a romance, although they're really slow burns.
Right.
Because in the same way, like you said, we talked about in a continuing series, some thrillers just have the singular person, but some mystery series or sci-fi series, or just anything kind
mm-hmm.
of long-running, TV or book wise, you'll have the best friend, you'll have the person who's, you know, that you end up forming a sort of informal group, where, like, on Buffy the Vampire Slayer,
mm-hmm.
they like to refer to it as the Scooby Gang after
right.
Scooby Doo. So, like, everyone sort of has their place in that group who's along for the ride that becomes more firmed up, more finalized as you go through the books. And so, usually, I will say this, even the ones that focus more on romance.
Mm-hmm.
They take a while to get there because they want to establish an incredible amount of world building happens in cozy mysteries.
Right.
So all that has to happen, and also all the characters have to happen, and then maybe we bring someone in.
Things sort of spontaneously happen.
Yeah. Even if you meet them in the first book, like
mm-hmm.
even if you met someone in the first, you meet that character in the first book who's going to be the romantic person.
Yeah.
It's probably a couple books down.
Yeah.
They might get to flirt in the second one.
Right. Is it the expectation in your experience, Miranda, that cozy mysteries are almost by design series?
Yes.
So there aren't very many sort of standalone.
I mean, there may be, but they're not going to get as highlighted. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Sure.
Like you might read one, but here's the thing. I would say the audience mm-hmm. for cozy mysteries are often people who not only like reading, but have the time, the wherewithal to mm-hmm. read a lot.
Right. Because it's kind of a high volume kind
yes.
of thing.
So it's almost like the people who like them are looking for a series. Mm-hmm. They're not necessarily looking for the one-off.
Yeah.
And also, it doesn't work the same way. You could never get a satisfying amount of world building in a single book.
Right.
To be to the level that it's comforting to read it like an old friend.
Right, right. Where you settle in mm-hmm. and... so I don't, I probably should have looked this up before we start talking on the recording, but there's a series of books. So Mitford was the setting.
Oh, Mitford Mysteries.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I've heard people say, as I'm helping them find things to read in my, you know, day job as a adult librarian, that it doesn't really matter what kind of book it is. It doesn't really matter what the plot is. As long as they can go back to that town and just spend a couple of hours in that town with those people, and they're willing to suspend any amount of disbelief just to have the return experience of settling back into, you know, those city limits and those people.
Yeah, I think it's a huge part of it. Just the ambiance and the feel of something. It just feels like a world that's fun that you want to return to, and they're
yeah.
your friends sometimes.
Right.
It can feel like that. It's not always like that, but I mean, ideally, they are by design meant to be something enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff. In fact, Miss Fisher's Murder Mysteries, which is a television series from Australia set in the 1920s,
okay.
historical, about actually a woman who is a female private detective, and I remember once my mother referring to it as, you know, that fun murder show.
Okay. Yeah.
So like, it's undeniably cozy mysteries have a higher body count probably than most thrillers.
Right.
Over time.
Right. Right. Right.
Yeah. But they downplay so much of that because they want you to enjoy the atmosphere.
Okay.
So a couple last things on this. Did you like, so you were kind of impressed by what they showed with Mrs. Jeffries. Did you find her a compelling character?
I did. Although there were some aspects of her character that seemed to be slightly, just slightly out of time.
So you found her compelling, but a little bit out of time. And I get that because that author is writing historical fiction.
Yeah.
You know, so it's someone from the 90s writing about what they imagine. And it is a fantasy in many ways that this woman would have a chance and be skilled enough to be able to sort of
right.
use the system she's in to have something fulfilling in her life that is solving murders.
Right.
So that's kind of interesting. But let me ask you, I don't know if you'd be interested in this one specifically, mm-hmm. but how do you feel about in the future potentially picking more up of this series or that author, or specifically just the genre? Would you want to breach into cozies again?
So yeah, I think I'd definitely like to read another of these 40. I mm-hmm. doubt that I'm going to read all 40, but it doesn't sound like you have.
I haven't read all
40. but I'll probably go to a review site and find two or three that are really highly rated.
Mm, okay.
Because I'd like to spend a little bit more time with these characters, understand them a little bit better. It was very pleasant. It was a pleasant way to spend some time. And I guess the other thing is, when you just read one book in a genre, you don't really know what are the things about that are characteristic of the genre or the series versus the book.
Right.
Case in point, I never had listened to any bluegrass. I thought when people ask me about music, I said I like everything but bluegrass and opera. But then I realized later I don't know why I'm saying that, because I like all the different kinds of. And so I sought out highly regarded American sort of new grass, Alison Krauss and mm-hmm. Union Station.
Yeah.
Listened to some of them. I thought this is really
Alison Krauss is beautiful.
This is amazing. This is really really good. And there are aspects of it that I thought, wow, they are such geniuses the way they modulated here, or the way that whatever, mm-hmm. in the music, and then grabbed another bluegrass, completely different, and they go, oh, wait a minute, that thing that I was attributing to Alison Krauss, that's just something about bluegrass.
You're like, oh, they all use banjo, or a lot of people like to yodel.
Yeah, it doesn't mean it was any worse, but I realized I didn't know as much as I thought about the one because I'd only knew the one. And so
although
I'd like
I
to read
say
more.
Alison Krauss is exceptional.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But I'd like to read more by this author and some other cozy mysteries so I can kind of suss out what mm-hmm. were the aspects that were unique to this and what were the things that were expected ways of writing and structuring and characterizing and describing mm-hmm. setting and so forth. But yeah, I this will not be my last cozy mystery.
Okay, good. Slowly I shall convert you.
Yes.
Come to the cozy side.
Yeah, come to the cozy side. You know, the older, I shouldn't generalize, but the older I get, the more appealing the come to the cozy side is as a come on.
That's a really good slogan, right?
Yeah, it really is.
Any group, come to the cozy
side.
Yeah,
there's enough strife in everyday life. Why am I reading about fake strife if I can kind of settle into some coziness? Actually, I need both. But
Yeah. And I wouldn't say this is pure escapism, but escapism has its place in literature. Mm-hmm. It's something, especially in troubling times, when why not indulge in?
Yeah.
You know, if nothing else, it's probably going to help your mental real estate a little bit.
Yeah.
So, okay. Well, good. I think for our first, you know, Swapsies Book Club, it's mm-hmm. a pretty good success. I really enjoyed mine. It got me excited about, not that I wasn't excited about sci-fi, but I you know, dipping my toes in after a while as an adult, not having read as much, you know, just getting broad strokes sometimes. It's great to sort of like get a little handout of like, here, try this one. So I appreciated it, and I did really enjoy it. Something I think, like I said, it's a good connection point with my father who loves mm-hmm. sci-fi.
Yeah.
And I don't think he'd heard of this series at all.
Yeah, yeah, let me know what he thinks about that.
So, yeah.
So I guess the other thing, just kind of in closing, maybe a recommendation for our listeners. It turns out that I had read Cozy Mystery before, but I didn't know that that's what it was.
Okay.
So my favorite mysteries of the past couple of years are published by a British TV presenter, Richard Osman. Thursday Murder Club was the first one. The second one came out in 2021, The Man Who Died Twice. And the third one is just out this week. The Bullet That Missed, Thursday Murder Club number 3 by Richard Osman. If you are not familiar with this series, I highly look up Thursday Murder Club. It's a cozy, I guess, in that it is set in a retirement community. The crime solvers are in their 70s.
Is it a team of unlikely detectives?
A team of unlikely detectives. With one exception, there's someone that we don't know as much about her background, but the more we know, the more likely she seems to be in the middle of chaos and mayhem.
All right.
But at first, we just knew her as a retired civil servant.
Okay.
But civil servant
includes... Civil servant redacted.
Exactly. That can include MI5, 6, 7, and numbers that I'm not allowed to say.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, well, great. Thank you for the tip, because now I have something new to put on my reading list if I ever get around to it. But yeah, I think success, and maybe we should try this again sometime.
Yeah. Well, we've missed Tamara. Probably should have started by saying, I can't believe we're going to do this without Tamara. But then we did.
We can fill the room.
Yeah.
But we do miss Tamara. We want you back. She'll be back soon.
Yeah. So thank you for listening to Shelf Check. Music for the podcast is Wonderful Adventures by Julian Van Arb, under license from First Com Music, Inc. Production and editing by Stephen McQuay, and thanks to the Arlington Public Library System and staff.